The current enterprise bankruptcy law of the People's Republic of China has been in place for more than a decade. Today, it is playing an increasingly important role in our economic life as China enters a stage of restructuring. Nevertheless, some in the legal profession believe it is only half a piece of legislation. So why is that? But before getting into that, let's get a little bit of background info out there about the enterprise bankruptcy law. And so we're talking about the corporate side of things later on, personal side of things.
Yeah, we're talking about the corporate side of things to basically give you a picture of how bankruptcy legislation here in this country is a work in progress. Looking at history, practically all enterprises were state-owned before China's reform and opening up in the 1970s. That means the enterprise relied on state funding to operate. There was no issue of bankruptcy. You wouldn't need a funding, or the bank would give you the money to keep producing or offering service. And then since the reform and opening up, China started developing a market economy. State-owned enterprises, private joint ventures, and foreign enterprises all became market actors. And the competition in a market economy means that there are winners and losers. The market needed an exit protocol for the losers who can no longer repay their debt. I mean, you're not making money. There's no point keeping you in the business. And then in 1986, China passed its first enterprise bankruptcy law that applied to state-owned enterprises only. It was replaced by the current edition, which applies to all types of businesses. And in recent years, the enterprise bankruptcy law is playing an ever more important role in the economy as China seeks to restructure its economy and tackle the issue of overcapacity across industries. Steel industry, a note. And in an effort to promote supply-side reform, China's top judge, Zhou Qiang, called for speedier handling of bankruptcy cases for so-called zombie enterprises. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about enterprises that are relying on financing to stay alive. And then in 2017, local courts across the country received nearly 10,000 bankruptcy cases, an increase by nearly 70% year on year. Mm. And in the first 10 months of 2018, they received more than 12,000 cases. So to handle the rising number of cases, experts are calling for the establishment of special courts to handle exclusive bankruptcy issues. The first such court was set up in Shenzhen in January 2019.
So that is relatively recent.
Yeah, right.
And, well, Patrick, you are from the States, and
yes.
The U.S. has long had a bankruptcy law. So I suppose,
yeah,
what are the advantages or necessities of having such a law?
Well, I mean, when we talk about bankruptcy and personal debt, I mean, we know that without the help of VCs, venture capitalists, and a lot of these folks throughout the United States, a lot of these businesses wouldn't even exist, right? They wouldn't thrive. You couldn't do it without capital. One of my least favorite things to hear is when someone will say, he's a self-made billionaire. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen. I mean, everybody needs, everyone gets an infusion of capital. President Trump was a millionaire by the time he was 3 years old. That was courtesy of his father.
And courtesy of the Deutsche Bank.
That's correct. Yeah. Let's not forget Deutsche Bank. I mean, we know that money just doesn't pop out of anywhere. And to hear that China is now considering some personal bankruptcy help or at least, you know, weighing it right now, taking a look at it, shows some real advancement in progressivism, I think, in the last 40 years of opening up. We do know that businesses left and right in the United States shut down because they just can't make ends meet. As a result, you have some people cooking the books, trying to stay alive, doing whatever they can, and they go under that way. So it's not always as simple as, well, don't bail them out because what if they just make the same mistakes again? Sometimes businesses have to go under to be able to be reinvigorated. Mm-hmm. Once again, to be able to become profitable. We know even a guy like Steve Jobs had no money when he started. The guy who started Amazon, Jeff Bezos, same thing. Had he not worked on Wall Street or had rich parents to sort of help him out in the beginning, we wouldn't have Amazon. So we need to sort of put it in perspective when it comes to that. Not to deviate too far off the bankruptcy topic when it comes to businesses, but it's a very broad topic and it really affects everybody.
Mm. And it's really interesting to see some cultures and countries sort of allow one to actively declare bankruptcy, and then there's certain proceedings that follows, and it's accommodating, and sometimes it's providing relief. And in other countries, such as China, we don't necessarily have this tradition of, okay, so if I declare bankruptcy or if a company declares bankruptcy, then you ultimately you want the discharge. I think that's what is asked, what is coveted here. So it's interesting to see that there's also that difference in perception and practice in that regard. But Lai Ming, I'd like to ask you a question about the current bankruptcy law being discussed right now and called only a half piece. What do legal experts exactly mean by that?
Well, on the one hand, China is moving faster with regard to bankruptcy-related legal work. The first exclusive court in Shenzhen took only a month to set up. It was proposed in December 2018 and by January 14, 2019 was operational. So from this example, we see China is moving fast to accommodate issues related to bankruptcy, but mostly in terms of corporate bankruptcy. What experts in the legal profession are saying that about the legislation being only half a piece. They're referring specifically to a lack of accommodation with regard to personal bankruptcy. So far, I think in October 2018, the Supreme People's Court mentioned that we should speed up the drafting or working on drafting a legislation regarding personal bankruptcy, and also in recent months we see more and more reports, media reports in this regard. So I suppose maybe the lawmakers are realizing that maybe it's time for us to have a legislation with regard to personal bankruptcy, and perhaps necessary steps are being taken in this regard. And right now we're just talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, I think there's a lot of discussion about this. One thing being that from the court's point of view, they're receiving a bit more, a bigger number of cases, and there's all this discussion about maybe setting more than one of these exclusive bankruptcy courts, and maybe that is also reflective of what's going on overall in the economy, that bankruptcies or liquidations as such, sometimes if it happens faster, then it's beneficial for the corporate as well as those that need to collect the debt.
Well, obviously, bankruptcy, less people off the hook, less creditors, less debtors to be off the hook, and to find a settlement, and maybe they can move on, maybe find a more profitable business to work in. And obviously, that's beneficial to the general economy. And I don't have ready figures at my hand, but I believe a lot of you guys who follow news in recent years must be aware of what happened in 2017, where a lot of P2P lending platforms went bust. Mm-hmm. And some of them went bust precisely because there are individual users of these platforms, they went into the business, they borrowed money deliberately with the intention to not to default on whatever they borrowed from these platforms, because they have an idea that, well, these platforms are funded, they were funded by venture capitals, and they were everybody's money. They were not anyone who can cut corners out of it. They stand to benefit. And as a result, we see due to attention, perhaps the business cycle, and also due to the government's attention to deleverage in the financial sector, a lot of these platforms went bust. And that was one example. And then if you also, like I said earlier, if you follow the news closely, in recent years, there have been a lot of reports about how households, individuals here in this country, they're taking on more debt, perhaps for buying a house, but also in many of the cases they spend money to buy maybe the latest iPhone or the latest Huawei phone or the latest consumer product. Yeah. And as a result, we see more and more defaults in terms of credit card debt. And so the situation is calling for some measures being taken to accommodate these changes, to get banks and individuals off the hook.
Well, that's really interesting, though. As in this discussion, we seem to have interchangeably used a business as well as an individual in this bankruptcy circumstance, but we don't have a personal bankruptcy law at the moment. I mean, then why do you think is that?
Well, we didn't have it because we used to believe here, there's a Chinese saying that 父债子还. So a son is supposed to pay back the debts that his father borrowed. And it's a tradition, it's a social norm, and it's also a virtue here in China to pay back debts. And as a result, people were pretty cautious about borrowing money from let's say from institutions or from individuals. And there wasn't a tremendous need for a personal bankruptcy. First of all, Chinese people used to spend less than they are, mm-hmm. and talk about great savings, yeah. The buttress or the driver of the Chinese economy. And so they can usually fall back on the savings to weather through difficulties. That was the case previously. And then when they do have to borrow money, they usually turn to family members, relatives, and friends. In that case, they don't necessarily have to pay interest on the money they borrow. Mm-hmm. So that was the practice. The social repercussion is minimal. Say you don't pay back your uncle's money. It's not going to dramatically affect the well-being of the economy as a whole. So there wasn't a lot of need to have something in place. And also the social norm, as a result, the social norm about debt payments, about 负债子还, was also represented in China's legislation. Article 108 of China's Civil Code stipulates that debts shall be cleared. If a debtor is unable to repay his debt immediately, he may repay by installments with the consent of the creditor or a ruling by a people's court. If a debtor is capable of repaying his debt but refuses to do so, repayment shall be compelled by the decision of a people's court. So that was previously we sort of relied on this stipulation by the civil court, general civil code, and we basically, that's what basically fell back to.
Interesting. Well, in the U.S., when where personal bankruptcy is, something that people talk about as well, and there are standard protocol to address this issue.
Yeah.
What do you think gave rise to something like that in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I think just as people, we tend to sometimes want to spend more than we save. We want success right now, not later on in the future. And we will often hemorrhage our own cash or the cash that we don't even have yet in order to sort of realize a dream. What happens is when you file for bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy in the U.S., it's something like 7 years you are affected. You can't buy a house. You can't get a car. You can't get a loan. You are more or less sort of out of the game.
Right.
And it's something you would do if you were to declare bankruptcy. You would hope to only go there one time, a last resort. I've known people who have been through this, and it is an emotional process. And you know, when you're having to fall back on family, as you mentioned, it's not always the best dynamic of borrowing from a family member,
no,
a parent, a sibling, a relative, because you do have that over your head. Whether you owe the bank or you owe your mom or dad or whoever it is. So, you know, we're looking at some of the stats here. In California, it's the worst. And I think that's probably just culturally, there's just more spending in a place like California. But they say as far as personal bankruptcies in the U.S. go, this is the most recent data they had. It's about half and half, men and women. It's, uh-huh. it's about 50-50. Most of the people who owe the most make the least at work. It's not a terribly surprising revelation, but if they're making less than $30,000 US a month, they are still wanting to live outside their means. They get a credit card. They get a second credit card.
Yeah.
Before you know it, they're in deep and often do resort to filing for bankruptcy. Why? Why are they going into debt? It turns out most of the time it's for medical expenses they can't pay off. Because their insurance doesn't quite cover it. Remember, it's not socialized insurance per se in the United States. There's still a number of states there who did not want to play into that system, unfortunately. So what you're stuck with is a lot of people having to rely on just private insurance that they can't afford. And if something goes awry, if they get into an accident and don't have the coverage, they're wiped out. There is no money. You know, if they had savings, that's gone too. So that's why we see oftentimes bankruptcies resulting from maybe it's an injury or an illness, and there's really no recovering from it.
That is the most unfortunate situation one can think of. And, well, when you look at the situation here in China, do you think now we kind of need legislation on personal bankruptcy? Is it time to sort of pull resources and the brains of legal experts to come up with one?
Well, if you read the news, if you believe the news, then obviously a lot of people who choose to default on the credit card debt, they are doing it intentionally. And that's something that we should rectify, obviously. And also, I think we are now in a position to facilitate such a system. I mean, one of the reasons that I failed to mention why we didn't have a personal bankruptcy provision was that we didn't have the means to implement some of these systems required for personal bankruptcy to work. I mean, China is still developing a social credit system. And in the absence of such a system, there's no reward or punishment according to people's social credit. Untrustworthy members of the society are not tremendously inconvenienced. Nowadays, we talk about how these defaulters are being punished by not having access to high-speed railway travel or airplane travel, and when you call them, you get a jingle telling you that this guy you're calling, he's a defaulter. Be careful when you hang out with them, sort of thing. So we're coming up with all kinds of ways to sort of trace and also punish people who can't deliver what they promised. And there are also, maybe years back, China was a country where people mostly relied on cash. You go to the street and you want to pay for, actually, no, if you want to pay for your son's tuition fee, you go in with cash. Mm-hmm. If you want, sometimes in extreme cases, you want to buy a car, you go in with bags of cash.
Yeah.
Nowadays, with online payment, I mean, you can basically scan a card, scan a QR code, and you can buy, let's say, even a small piece of, let's say, sticky soy sticks or spicy soy sticks, lá tiao. There is things very, very cheap. I mean, just a salted egg, that sort of thing. Very, very cheap stuff. You can go there and show your QR code. So everything will be in record, will be kept in record. So make it easier for people for the authorities to keep track of people spending. That's making people much, much difficult to relocate their resources elsewhere. For instance, I liquidated all my assets and gave the cash to, say, a dear friend of mine, and then declare personal bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Previously, we didn't have a way to track it. Maybe now, with this big data working, we'll be able to do that.
Well, that's also something I'm very interested in finding out some details about. That is, yes, in theory, these days when we're making online transactions and dealing with our finance online, and that means a digital footprint everywhere, and then it's easy to track. But are we there yet in terms of being able to detect and have a clear picture of people's personal assets? And the way, also, I'll need to borrow your expertise here, Patrick. The way it works in the U.S., is it kind of like that there is a system of some sort to have a pretty good idea of people's portfolio, therefore differentiating when a person is hiding assets and sort of tricking the authorities into believing that this person has to declare bankruptcy? And what if not? So basically that.
Well, we have what's called the credit score. Everyone's got a credit score. And I don't mean one of these social ones yet, but I think that's on the way. But, you know, the physical, how many cards do I have? How much do I owe? What are my assets? But then, I mean, you announced sort of getting tricky. And the super rich are really good at sort of the offshore account road. But we'll kind of cut that out of the equation.
The Cayman Islands.
Yeah, the Cayman Islands. We'll cut those folks out of this discussion only because we were talking about, you know, the middle class, upper class consumers who are the ones who are hit by debt most often, right? And I mean, to track They haven't caught up on the sort of Alipay WeChat sort of path yet back in the States. I mean, I think that's coming. But the more we are paying digitally, I mean, these digital wallets, we all think, oh, how convenient. Well, let's not forget, it's really convenient for everybody else to watch what we're doing, right? I mean, that's why we have ads popping up on our phones, and that's why our purchases are tracked. So, yeah, to go off the grid and go back to the cash-only system would be quite radical. I don't think anybody has it in their nature to go back, and as a result, you tend to avoid some of the traps, the pitfalls, and the obvious gambits here, trying to cheat the system. Everything you've bought today was by WeChat, right?
Or
basically,
Alipay, or
even grocery.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so Alipay or other online payment. I mean, banks are coming up with their own payment method too.
Yeah.
Only a step behind. And also, it matters who's looking at your business transactions or your purchase transactions. I mean, it could be maybe for the authority to look at your data. That's okay. I mean, it's not like they're not already doing that. I understand that maybe in the U.S., when you're doing deposit or withdrawal of large amount of cash, I mean, the bank is obligated to report.
That's right.
So that's one way for them to track the assets of individuals working and living in the country.
I think there's something also to be said about the stress that is caused and that people experience. And if we're going to speak incredibly serious, people have taken their lives over debt. It's gotten that dark for some people. And there are services that exist to help consolidate, to help you make payments that are somewhat reasonable, and that it doesn't mean it's the end of the road for you if you go into debt. But, you know, at the same time, these creditors and lenders are not your friends.
No, by no means.
They stay in business because you're out of business. So it's a, you know, to file, again, for bankruptcy is the last resort. It's got to be.
But that being a resort is sort of the interesting new perspective for a lot of Chinese people, because that never used to be something we would even think about, because that's not a life jacket. That is not, you know, life support or whatever as an option we consider. And this is interesting when you look at what kind of soil grows what kind of culture. And, well, when you talk about the U.S., when you look at U.S. history, you know, it being this free land, and then people came to the U.S. for a second chance, and maybe it, well, maybe it gave, it had this sort of embedded in the culture that, well, you know, people come here for a second chance, and you can turn a new leaf, and that kind of thing. And here in China, we don't necessarily have that. I don't think, you know, people used to think that way. So interesting to see what happens next.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the system here would be, I've heard a lot of Chinese folks tell me this, it's socialism with capitalism characteristics, right?
Chinese characteristics.
With Chinese characteristics. And in America, it's capitalism with capitalistic, capitalism times itself. So it's, you can see as a society is still in its reform, it's opening up. Is in some ways it's attractive to sort of have this, because it gives people another chance, but it also gives businesses and state-owned interests something else to strive to.
Well, you never know. This personal bankruptcy thing may also give a boost to business people, because it used to be the case that lenders, even your business people, you have to provide some kind of individual collateral. You're personally held liable for the money you borrow for your business. In that case, people are not always off the hook when they find that they have filed bankruptcy for their corporate.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, you are listening to Roundtable. Coming up next, free-range parenting. What does that mean? And we'll have our special segment on Monday, Motivational Monday, when we give you that energy boost. We'll be back after this short break. Stay with us.